Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn. How deeply grateful I am. We're together right now on this February 3rd, day 2019. We could be a lot of different places in this world, but here you and I are together. And I am deeply, deeply grateful for that rendezvous that you and I are having right now. And I hope that what I have to offer you today on worry is a very, very special program for you. And a lot of us, including yours truly here, suffers from worry. I want to remind you that you could do a lot of very kind and loving things by becoming a sponsor, not only listening to this radio program, which benefits you, but listening and responding to your heart. That is a very big thing. Your donations, your tax-deductible gifts make it possible for me to be on the radio. Without them, I could not offer my radio programs. And if you go to the website at aspire.org, you will see that there is at the bottom of the page, Why Support Aspire. You can click on that. And for becoming a sponsor, and you can read all about where your donations go and what they're all about, you get so many wonderful gifts. My podcast, video cast and commentaries twice a month. You also get the message of the month sent to you each and every month. About mid-month is when that goes out for the following month. You also get access to over 120 of my discourses, my TV discourses that I did on all sorts of subjects, from Nobody Likes You Anyway to Passing Through the Fires, The Sound of One Hand Clapping. There are so many. Everything there to help you sustain an authentic spiritual practice. So if you are enjoying these programs, which I hope you are, I hope you will also be a sponsor. All we're asking for is the ability to pay our bill. That's it. Nothing more, nothing less. I'm not trying to be a world-renowned teacher. That would be funny, wouldn't it? Anyway, go take a look. Worry. What is worry? I looked it up in the dictionary. Give away. Give way to anxiety or unease. Allow one's mind to dwell on difficulty or troubles. Okay? To cause or feel anxiety or concern. There you are. And all of us have it. All of us have this noise in the background of feeling like we're worried about maybe some outcome, some situation that we're facing. I see it, of course, all the time in hospice, but I also see it in our daily life, and I also have it as well. And believe it or not, whether we like to think of it this way or not, a lot of it is genetic. Yes, you inherit the worry gene, as it were, as we inherit so many things by entering into the body. Okay, let's get into the first question. First one's from Carrie in Los Angeles. So you admitted that you worry. Is your philosophy not helping you not worry, Carrie? Well, Carrie, first of all, I don't have a philosophy. Now, what I teach here may sound like philosophy to you, but actually it is a way of life. And I want you to try to understand that it is strictly a way of life. And it is the way we look at what I am teaching, whether I am teaching you something that the Buddha so beautifully offered, or Jesus or Lao Tzu. You can turn that into a philosophy if you like. But really, it's a way of life. And it takes a tremendous amount of effort to live in it. But, and here's why I chose, Carrie, your question. There is no cure-all for the genetics that we suffer from or that we have within us. Your genetics, as long as you live in this body, are not going to go away. You really need to hear me on this. You will have genetic traits like I have genetic traits, and they are not going to go away. I want you all to hear that. Inner work, spiritual work, is not a cure-all for the problems of our genetics. They don't just go away. Now, when you practice the way inside of you, you will start to be less prone to going to that place where these genetic difficulties lie. And you will be less prone to be impulsed by these genetic tendencies. So what my work has been is that Greg will worry. And that's fine. I don't put him in some place where he's supposed to be, beyond all of that. I know what Greg is. I know his human traits. I know exactly how he works within himself. So I don't worry about that. If I get caught in the mesh of his nuttiness, of his pedestrian mentality, his acuity for mischief, then I know how to get out of it, and I can recognize it very quickly, and I know what to do about it. So this worry trait that I have, that many of us have in this world, isn't about my philosophy not working, as you put it. It isn't, again, a philosophy that I am teaching you here. I am teaching you transcendence. And transcendence means that the authentic part that is the, shall we say, I'm just going to use this word, the me, which there really isn't any, but we'll just use it for argument's sake, for me to transcend, to rise above, to live in a different place, to realize I already live in that different place, and that I must merely take my attentions there, and cultivate a relationship on that other shore, as I call it. Now, once you can understand that, then you have the means for spiritual transformation. But if you don't understand that, and if that doesn't, motivate you and help you want to change your motive and intent for the way you live, then those words mean nothing, and anything I would say would mean nothing. And what you have to understand is that everything that is important in your life will just remain dormant. You will never know what it means to have the way, the truth, and the light in you. That is beyond your and my worry thing. So I have faults. I want you to understand that, Carrie. I have them. Everybody does. I don't really care about everybody else in that regard of that. I know I have faults. I know I worry. I know what Greg puts me through. But now, due to the way, understanding it, I don't expect Greg to change, and I don't expect him to get better, and I don't expect him to stop worrying, because he's going to worry. It is my relationship with Greg that matters. And I must reassess that all the time, in every way, and every day I reassess it. I understand he's getting older. I understand what his needs are, his desires, what he's trying to do to me. I understand the whole kit and caboodle of him. So I don't sit there and just mull over whatever it is he's thinking. I just don't do that. I'm not looking to be helped. I'm looking to awaken. And through the awakenings I've had, I truly understand the compassion for Greg and what he's all about, and I don't give him any guff. I don't talk to him. I don't try to talk him into or out of. I don't try to comfort him. I don't do any of that. I leave him alone. And I've learned over the many years of my practice that if you leave them alone and you don't talk to them, and you learn how to not even look at them in order to allow them to get your attention, that a lot is achieved. So it's a practice for me, Carrie. And I hope that helps you understand that this is not a cure-all. If you're looking for a cure-all, you'll be searching all of your life for that cure-all. That will never happen. Most people find it in a bottle. Most people find it in a pill or in marijuana, but it's only temporary. And once you're done with, you know, getting high and all that, you come right back to the same body you've always had. So there you are. Carrie, please forgive me. Namaste. The next question comes from Hester in Nevada. Greg, how do I stop worrying? I am constantly worrying about things that never happen. Hester. My answer to you is almost the same as Carrie, but in a little different twist. When we are trying to stop a genetic trait that we may have, or we're trying to resist it, we are engaging in a very noble battle within ourselves. And it is a battle. It is the battle of logic and reasoning over impulse and emotionality. But I'm telling you, you will never be able to overcome any of this if you don't understand where the source is. And if you don't understand the source of the trait, your worry, then you will constantly be fighting it, thinking it's you. You are that which does not exist in the body. The body runs itself. And it creates all of the drama and craziness and circumstance and conditions of our life. And it goes in and out and in and out. And there are just so many ways in which it protrudes in our life into all sorts of categories of right, wrong, good, bad, comfortable, uncomfortable. You really, it's a gamut of things that it goes through. But if you get caught in that gamut, if you get caught in that stuff, you will never find a way out. I have found a way, and I will give it to you. It won't stop the worrying. It's going to go on. It's going to persist because it isn't you. It is your body. It is your genetics. And you really have to hear that. You are not your genetics. Your body is the genetics. But you as a person are not the genetics. Now, until that is absolutely clear in your mind, until you can absolutely become resolute in that, I am not this body. And whatever this body does, it does. It does on its own. Now, I have to look at my body functions and the things that it wants to do, the mischief it wants to get in. And I have to ask myself, do I want to sustain that? Do I want to keep that? Do I want to make that my own? Is this where I begin and end my life? There is a vast difference, Hester, between living and having a life. People live through impulse. They live through getting and losing. They live through the worry of ups and downs. They live from the skin. But to have a life, this is something totally different. To have a life, there must be awareness. There must be consciousness. There must be that which lives deep within you and is allowed to awaken through you. When your life exceeds your living, you have done a great work within yourself. But until your life, which is love, exceeds the living of wanting love, and wanting things to be right according to your proclamations, there is only going to be confusion and doubt. And people are going to miss, and you're going to miss. You can't stop the worry, but you can stop your attention to the worry. And that is far more important than trying to stop the futile. You have to really work upon it. And as I said here to Carrie, you don't talk to the worry. You don't chit-chat to it. You don't have conversations with it. If you do, you will sink into it. Number two, you have to be willing to allow that worry to go on without you, without your consent, without your proclamation, your feelings of maybe emotional feelings of, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, kind of thing. The feelings of being absolutely frightened by it. You have to look at life as the unknown. And it is. Your karma's involved in this. My karma's involved. And the best we can ever do is to live in respect to our karma and never do those things and live those things and acquire those things within us that would keep us connected to our worry. And that would be emotionality, mischief, anything we could come up with like that. Now that is deeply important. Should you come up with that? Should you have that kind of awareness? Should you be impressed by any of that? You will find that your worry accelerates because you're keeping it going. Logic and reasoning play a big part in worrying. We imagine things that could or might or will or whatever. And we don't even know. We really don't know, but we like to believe we know. And we'll look at ourselves and we'll say, well, it's just my luck. This is what's going to happen. How do you know? I've thought that about myself often, and I was wrong. 99% of the time, wrong. Does that stop Greg from worrying? No. He likes to continue the process. And once I understood that, once I really, really understood that, that's when the whole thing stopped for me. My worry went on, but I stopped participating in it, and I found the life, not the living, that made me worry. So you have to look at it from the point of view that life is love, and that the meaning of your life is to find that love that lives in your life. This is what it's really all about. Don't be afraid. What the body is all about is what the body's all about. It is about fear. It is about wanting pleasure over pain. It is about mischief. It is about all sorts of things that it likes to get involved in that have nothing to do with the meaning of your life. Everybody, at one time or another, everybody, has to decide, am I going to live in the livingness of my genetic nature, or am I going to find the life, the authentic life, and make that the livingness of my life, of my daily living, of everything I do? I have to decide that. You have to decide that. And those decisions are extremely important. I know people who never find the meaning of their life. They only know the livingness that keeps them busy. They've got what I call ants in their pants, and they just have to stay busy all the time because they wouldn't want their living to catch up to them. Life is the antidote for the way I live. And if I find that life within me, I change everything in my world. And that those changes have nothing to do with what I want. They have to do with what is authentic and what is needed. And I've found that you've really got to trust that, or the worry will just keep nagging you over and over and over again. Something for you to think about. Hester, thank you for your beautiful question. Please forgive me. Namaste. The last question from Raymond. He does not tell me where he comes from. How do I trust what I can't think? Like what you teach. You know, Raymond, I really don't have a good answer for this. One that will make you happy or make sense to you. There are certain things in this lifetime you either know or you don't. Things that you can trust in, things that pull your inner cord to awaken or not. And I talk to people at hospice, and I talk to people who are my students. I talk to people who are not my students in session work. But they all suffer from the same thing, their mind and what they have done to their mind. And they've become absolute in their thinking, and they have come to conclusions through bias about themselves and their livingness. And that's it. And you can't change them because the pride enters in and all of that other stuff that isn't very healthy for us. But nonetheless, unless the nun, this is what we do. I can't take that away from you. If you are going to come to a moment of awakening, it will be because you are no longer interested in the instincts that guide your body and your mind to think the way they do. And those instincts come from our genetic emotionality. And when you see that, like I see, how my worry is a genetic factor, and how it works within me and what it does to me, I am very free to let it go, to no longer allow it to have its will and way with me. And I start to think differently within myself. I start to no longer think of myself, but rather use my mind as a bigger function of consciousness to take in that which can't be thought and really can't be taught. Once you understand that there is that which can't be thought and taught, that which exists as being, as isness, as that, this is when something magnificent begins to arise within you. And you start to feel the ebb and the flow of what it means to live in consciousness and not from thought and belief. This is very, very important. Most of us come to some major conclusions about our life that have nothing to do with our life at all. We come to conclusions about who we are, about what is right, what is wrong, what is good, what is bad. We come to some major stuff, none of which are actually true. They just are Greg Penn illusions about himself. And you have them too. Yes, there are certain things you can't think and you can't talk about. There are certain things that mean so much in this world that you can't really comprehend it in the mind. Our mental acumen is not based in that. To understand the way, you have to allow for the heart. To allow for the heart means that I must forego my logic and reasoning for the sake of something far greater than what I can think. I'm out of here. I gotta go. Raymond, thank you for your beautiful question. I hope it helped. Please forgive me. And thank you, my audience, for listening. Be back on the air next week. Please forgive me, won't you? Namaste.